You're listening to Resonance 104.4 FM. I'm Alex Fitch, and this is I'm Ready for My Close-Up. In 6 days' time, it's the start of Sci-Fi London, a 5-day film festival that celebrates both old and new science fiction on the big screen, with premieres of a variety of new films, as well as a chance to see such classics as the Hammer Sci-Fi films The Quatermass Experiment and Quatermass 2, as well as the original British sci-fi film H.G. Wells' Things to Come, which is showing in a restored print. This year, Sci-Fi London also coincides with CineXcess, a conference about cult films that includes guest speakers John Landis and Stuart Gordon. So tonight, I'm talking to Louis Savvy, the organiser of the two events, about his love of science fiction and how his festival brings respite to those of us who are sick of more mainstream fare.
Well, you should come and sit if you... I'm sure you know it, but Things to Come...
Yeah,
we've got a restoration of the movie at the festival, and another movie you might be interested in is Future by Design. This very strange guy called Jack Fresco, and he's a futurist architect, product designer, and he, I think it was in the 40s, he invented a 3D viewing system that doesn't need glasses. But it only works from 3 feet away and at 30 degrees, something like that. There's a very finite spectrum, but it worked. But it's 3D. Okay. And he tells the story that he invited Technicolor and Kodak and a few other big companies at the time to come and view this marvel and invest in it because so he could take it to the next stage. And, you know, and they basically said, well... it doesn't work further than 3 feet away. And he said, yep, that's why you're here. You know, and he said, well, it doesn't work more than 30 degrees. He said, that's why you're here. What I need is the investment to take it to, you know, you can see it works, but I need lots of money to make that leap. And I said, well, how does it work? And he said, I'm not at liberty to tell you that, you know. Okay, well, if you get it working, we'll come back and see it, and then we'll think about investing some money in it. And it certainly said it never got off the ground. To be honest, it's really interesting. He designs. He believes in shaping the environment to control human behaviour. Basically, if you build the right spaces and have them work all in the right way, then people will be a bit more respectful with them and so on. He's a real character, but he's done work with Bucky Fuller and Einstein. He's met on a couple of occasions, and they sort of were talking big ideas and stuff. He invented a prefabricated building in the 30s or 40s made of aluminium, which you could just sort of ship to somewhere and clip together, and it's just, I mean, it's all this stuff that is amazing, absolutely amazing. 28 weeks later, I haven't even seen it, I've been chasing Fox to get in and see it, but I included it in my festival, so.
Well, it's cool that you got it for that. I mean, how far in advance of the cinema release is that?
Well, they wouldn't let me call it the UK premiere because I think they're going to do one on May the 1st, an official one, but we haven't heard any more details than they said we're going to do one. They said I could call it my closing night film, and I pushed it into the first UK public performance in the UK, I think, when I was talking to them. And actually, looking at the site, the worldwide release is May the 11th, and we're showing it on the 6th. So I'm hoping this is the first
non-celebrity,
public, worldwide screening that there is of the film. So, and I'm looking forward to seeing it because it's won Carlos Fresnadillo, or however you say his name, which I loved. I don't think Attacked was a perfect movie by any means, but there was some remarkable imagery. But no, we've heard reasonably good things about it. Cool. And again, it's a director who I really liked his last film. So not a big Danny Boyle fan, Alex Garland fan particularly.
Well, I like 28 Days Later, but I must admit I wasn't overly impressed by Sunshine. Yeah. It was highly derivative.
Yeah.
And The Beach was just god-awful.
Yeah. Yeah, well, The Beach was bad. 28 Days Later, I was... I'm not a big sort of horror...
Right,
horror, sci-fi, horror crossover fan. Particularly, we tend not to screen a lot of horror unless it's completely over the top. So last year we did a screening of Die You Zombie Bastards,
yes.
which actually has a natural break in the middle. It's delivered on two tapes, so that you have to you know, physically take one out and put the other one in. And, you know, I sort of phoned them up, started complaining. And they went, no, that's how we send it to everybody. And, you know, have a look, because the DVD copy that, you know, the screener we saw doesn't have this particular thing in it. And when it gets to the end of the first tape, it melts on screen. You see all the film go up looking like it's on fire. And then it restarts and you get a different film in Spanish. And then it melts again and then it all goes black and stuff. And so we took the opportunity, actually, when that happened, to go in and give everybody free beer. So, and it's such a cheesy, completely over-the-top film. And Plain Dead is kind of... Flight of the Living Dead. It's kind of in that vein. If you took snakes on a plane, every scene, and replaced the snakes with a zombie, then you've got Plain Dead, basically, or Flight of the Living Dead. I mean, it's fabulous. It's, you know, Kevin J. O'Connor just, you know, throws in the occasional, you know, very silly line. It's got teenage kids who are really annoying, throwing a ball around on a plane, and you just want them to die. You've got the sort of, you know, the hero black guy, kind of a la Dusk Till Dawn, you know, who comes in with the, you know, the G.I. Joe kind of, you know, big bulk and everything else. I'll save everybody, and, you know, throws, and his girlfriend starts going, "Are you mad?" I mean, it's got some good stuff. And Nun, you know, having her legs ripped off, and you know, so it's every cliche, sort of every stereotype that you could think of is put on this thing, plus a, you know, a scientist with a kind of rage-like virus that turns everybody into zombies, brings them back from the dead, and it's glossy and it's kind of, you know, it's nice. It's a fun one. So,
forward to that.
You know, if it's a sci-fi film, it's a new one, and especially if it's got a British element to it, I'm very happy to support it. It doesn't mean I have to like it. You know, it's a kind of publisher's view of it, if you like, and a me personally view. So as a publisher, the website, the festival is about saying, well, this is new, you won't have seen it before, or you're going to see it first, or we think this is cool, or whatever else, and here it is, and we'll stand by that. You know, if everybody comes to see 28 weeks later and they hate it, you know, you got to see it a week before anybody else did, you know, at our festival, you know, in a different context to going to the cinema, you know, just on your own. And, you know, so I mean, Sci-Fi London started because there wasn't enough science fiction on, you know, as far as I was concerned, at the cinema. It was also to get a girl who did PR and didn't like science fiction, and we were just friends. And basically, I challenged her. She told me one day that she didn't like science fiction, so I challenged her to, if I start a film festival, will you PR it and get people like you to come to it? So, and 6 years later, it's a nice geek end story because we've got two kids together. So, so I got the girl, and I still have the festival. So, But basically, it kind of came out of her, "I don't like science fiction." And I said, "Well, that's like saying you don't like jazz." I mean, it's a stupid thing to say, as is my response. But, you know, it's too influential. It's too big a thing to say, you know, to dismiss a whole, it's not even a genre, to dismiss a whole, you know, storytelling mechanism, if you like, that has had such an influence on everything we do.
I mean, I suppose it's, the problem is most people's experience of science fiction is bad Hollywood science fiction.
It's stuff like Sunshine. You finish your popcorn and you come out and go, "What should we come next week and see?" You know, Spider-Man 3's opening. I mean, that's as much conversation as you need. The effects look good. Nice ship. You know, where does it go beyond that? You know, and if you're someone who enjoys film, it's a waste of 2 hours. And it's a waste of 10 quid or however much it costs to get in and see that film. So, you know, we would have, and still have, because she still doesn't really like science fiction, but she now has seen Stalker and Solaris and Fahrenheit 451. And if anyone asks me, I actually do have a favourite film, which is La Jetée. I think it's an absolute masterpiece. And, you know, it'd be my desert island film. You know, you can appreciate the original Battlestar Galactica for being kind of camp and having Dirk Benedict, you know, swanning around, you know, and for its sort of kitsch, if you like, you know. And you can kind of appreciate the remaking of it for its sort of soap opera, if you like.
People are so apologetic about science fiction these days. Whenever you hear about actors saying they're in a science fiction project, they'll say, "Oh, it's not really science fiction."
Soderbergh's Solaris is a perfect example of that. They didn't know how to sell it. It's a George Clooney film.
But thinking about Battlestar Galactica, I was just reading today that I think Time has a list of the 10 best TV shows you know, that you can watch.
Dramas.
Battlestar Galactica's in there at number 5, and they're almost apologetic for having to include it.
We actually, one of the sort of ideas, and we've still had about the festival, where I'm kind of, less precious about it now, was we were going to do a come out of the closet kind of campaign. We're going to do an outrage campaign, as it were. You know you like science fiction. Come out, stand up, be proud. You know, don't shy away. You know, it's not something to be ashamed of. You know, that kind of. It would have been a silly campaign, I think, but it is. I think you're right. People do kind of, you know, in other things that I do, everybody thinks I'm a Trekkie. Or Trekker, or whatever, because they don't understand that there is multi levels to what science fiction is. So it's easy to sum it all up in one, in one phrase. Star Trek, Trekker, Trekkie, or whatever, and it's and that's not science fiction, not really. It's it's highly, the first few series have been highly influential. It's spawned massive. Massive franchises, spun up. And I, don't get me wrong, I enjoy Star Trek, some of it. But it's, again, I think it's like music, it's mood. It depends on the mood that you're in as to what. So the festival tries to do sort of a couple of things. One is to deliver thrills and spills, for the Battlestar Galactica, redo fans, if you like, of which I'm one. And we've got, this year we've got a movie called Recon 2022, The Mezzo Incident, which is the sequel to Recon 2020, the Caprini assault, I think, or Caprini massacre. Okay. The nice long time, and it's a trilogy, so there will be a third episode coming. I guess it will be Recon 2024, or whenever we finish, whenever however many years later it is set in that universe. But it's a low budget Canadian film. It's full of fantastic special effects. It's got a really good baddies. They're called the Mahars. They're interdimensional. They can read emotions from people and kind of get a feel of something that's really frightening to them, and so can appear in that kind of guise when they materialize in our universe, as it were. So it's a really good excuse for him to put werewolves and robots and just everything in the first film. This second one is a little more hardcore, but it's not set on a nice planet and fabulous to look at and really good fun,
And you can enjoy it if you haven't seen the first one.
Absolutely, they stand alone. It's sort of new mission, new planet, new attitude if you know the first one. But as a film, it's sort of space above and beyond, if you like. You follow the crew, they arrive, the shit hits the fan, they fix it, I won't tell you the end. But we have effectively the world premiere. We have the world premiere of the movie, and we've got cast and crew in attendance as well, and the director's coming over from Canada, and so it should be a really good fun thing. He's also doing a special effects workshop on the Saturday morning, where he's going to be talking through some of the effects shots and how to make really, really good combat gear out of really cheap cheap clothing and stuff, because they had very little budget on this stuff. So we've got sort of that, and then on the other hand we've got Paprika,
the new Turkish
film. He did Perfect Blue. He's just amazing visuals, unbelievable stories, and this thing is, I think we described it in the program as Hello Kitty meets Philip K. Dick. It's a very strange movie, and beautiful to look at, and again we're sort of, we're pleased. It's not a UK premiere for us, it's the London premiere, but we kind of go from the high action stuff to things that are a bit more cerebral, or we cater for people who like their science fiction a bit a bit more grown up.
I noticed this year you're also doing a sort of a research conference alongside the festival, Cine Access. How did that come about?
Last year we did, I've known a guy called Xavier Mendick for a few years. He runs the Cult Film Archive at Brunel University, and they've got an amazing collection of memorabilia and DVDs and videos and all sorts of junk and fabulous things. which are associated with cult film. He's an expert in sort of Italian 70s horror and underground USA movies, you know, and sort of grindhouse stuff. I mean, he's got a really wide interest. And we did an event last year on Ginger Snaps, which was as kind of, it was, I think there was a documentary alongside it called Menstrual Monsters, and it was about whether, you know, Ginger Snaps was a female horror movie and had that perspective first, and so, and it caused
off the back of that issue of Swamp Thing by Alan.
Yes, yeah, yeah. Well, this, it spawned some amazing debate and shouting from the audience, you know, where people say, "Don't you tell me what a woman does," you know, to all the men on the panel, you know. It was interesting. It was very good. Anyway, off the back of that, we got talking, and I said, you know, punch ups are great. You know, that kind of punch up is what, you know, that's, you know, I enjoy that, especially if I over film. You know, it's because nobody's right. You know, it would be quite good fun. And he said, we'd like to run a conference. We'd like to do much more of this. And, you know, we sat down and fleshed some ideas out about how it might work. What it does for the festival, and again, this is the thing about not just being restricted to science fiction. Sci-Fi London has always been, I've always seen it as a kind of brand name, if you like.
Yeah.
You know, Pizza Hut doesn't only sell pizza. You can buy pasta and salad there. I don't know. So we will show fantastic films, surreal movies. You know, we screened The Machinist a few years ago.
I mean, that does kind of have a Twilight Zone aesthetic to it.
But it does, but it's not a science fiction film. It's not a paranormal film. It's not, you know, it's all in his head. It's just, you know, it's just a Hitchcock movie. It's like Mirage, you know, it's a Gregory Peck movie where he gets stuck. He goes down, thinks there's a basement to a building that he's in, and the basement's not there. And, you know, it's fabulous. So it's a sort of late 50s, early 60s black and white movie. And it's very, very dark. And it's kind of in that, I think The Machine is in that kind of thing. It's all in his head. You know, you could replace any part of that, and it wouldn't make any, you know, there aren't spaceships, there's no magic, there's no, but it fits perfectly in with, you know, with a crowd.
People who come to see Sci-Fi London will have seen more Michael Ironside films than most of the other people who've seen Machinist.
Yeah, no, absolutely, absolutely, absolutely.
I believe you're showing Edmund.
Which is it's Stuart Gordon's latest movie, and it's William H. Macy in it. David Mamet wrote it, you know,
I know, I mean, that's kind of a weird change of direction for Gordon to do kind of like a serious thriller with an A-list writer and an A-list, you know, cast. I mean, there's anything
actually
wrong with that.
If you look up Stuart Gordon on IMDb, his first play was written by David Mamet.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So, and he, because he comes from a theatre background. I mean, I didn't know any of this stuff, he's coming to the festival. Yeah, you know. You know, and exactly. I mean, I know him from the work I've seen, and I haven't seen all of his work either. And I kind of had this thing of, all right, so he's horror, he does that, you know, that's kind of. And if you read his bio, he's you know, he spent 10 years or 12 years doing theatre in New York, had a theatre company which I can't remember the name of. He basically kick-started David Mamet's career. Although I'm sure someone wrote that, you know, I'm sure on David Mamet's site it says something different. And do you know they're making House of Reanimator?
Well, I heard that it was on the cards, and then it was off, then it was back on.
With William H. Macy and Brian Usner. Cool. So, and they're both going to be at the festival. We don't have William H. Macy, unfortunately, but we've got Brian Usner and we've got Stuart Gordon, and they're going to be on stage doing a free Q&A.
Cool.
So come along and ask them the question. Is it really on, or whatever, so... the Cult Film Conference, I wanted to add, I'm always looking to add something sort of fresh each year to the festival, and we're kind of restricted in the number of films that are any good each year that are produced that are genre based that we can screen. You know, we had 400 short films submitted this year and we picked 13. So, I mean, there were some fabulous ones in there, but there's also a lot of, you know, very staid, tired stories, not very well delivered, you know, and some fantastic ones, you know, which are obviously the ones we select. So, in terms of features, it's, you know, some years it's a little dry, if you like, in what's out there.
Well, you can only show what's being made. I mean, it's as simple as that. Because I interviewed a woman from the BFI a couple of weeks ago about the London Lesbian and Gay Film Festival, and there just didn't seem to be that many gay films made over the last year, so they had to show an awful lot from the archive.
Absolutely, you know, absolutely. It's that if there aren't any films, you know, one year, Sci-Fi London may have to do a complete retrospective, you know.
This year, I mean, you know, one of your centre point screenings is this new print of Things to Come. I mean,
Yeah, no, absolutely, absolutely. You know, there's we've got I don't know, we've got, you know, there's opportunity to pull in some, you know, some classic titles, if you like. I mean, in every year, although we've tried in the last few years to have much more of a lean towards newer material. And it's always interesting talking to the distributors as well, because, you know, you read the other sites, you go to other film festivals, you know, you see the news about what's coming up, you know, you keep your finger on the pulse, as it were, and then you go, oh, that's coming out, that sounds interesting, and, you know, talk to, you know, an independent film studio, film distributor in London, and say, I'd like to screen that, and they go, well, that's not a science fiction film. Okay, so it's about an alternative America, you know, where the Confederacy won, right, okay. You know, and I think it is a science fiction film. It's one of the tropes of science fiction. It's one of the, you know, one of the strands of science fiction. You know, I can point you to the wiki page if you need to. Like, you know, you want to. It's very much a science fiction film, and even if it's not a science fiction film, that's how you don't want to sell it. You know, you want to put it out as a political drama or whatever. You know,
it's not Mondo. By yeah, it at this festival first.
It's not it, absolutely, absolutely, and our audience will love it and they'll really enjoy what it is as a film. And I don't think it'll do you any harm. And it took a lot of convincing actually to get Confederate States of America in the festival. I don't know if you've seen it.
Yeah, yeah, no, I saw that festival.
Oh, right, okay, yeah, yeah. And it's, you know, again, it's not a perfect film, but it's a fabulous, you know, fabulous really piece of work. Ideas, yeah. You know, it's and absolutely on brand for Sci-Fi London. You know, it's a sort of grown-up film. You can come out of there and, you know, enjoy that, and you can go and have a conversation with someone about what's in it. Yeah. You know, not about the special effects. You know, it's.
Well, I think, I mean, my favourite film I saw at the festival last year, I can't think of the title off the top of my head, but it was the sort of Frankenstein one, which is basically just a two-hander set in the Arctic.
Subject
waste.
Two.
Yeah, where he keeps on killing his friend and bringing him back from the dead.
Yeah.
I thought that was great.
Yeah.
Know?
And that was I think I got that through Sundance, and it's, you know, they don't kind of classify their movies in any particular genre. They put them in a strand. I think it was a midnight movie or a, you know, an after dark movie or something. And I sort of, you know, go and trawl around those places having a look. And it sounded really, really interesting. And when I saw it, I just thought, this is fabulous. It's, again, it's, you know, for anyone who doesn't know it, it's basically a two-hander in a log cabin. You know, a scientist invites a research student to come and join him to do some work over the summer, I think it is, or can become his research assistant. And he tells him that basically he's found a way of, you know, preserving life. And he says, great, oh, yeah, happy to work for you. And he cuts his throat and kills him. And then brings him back to life and says, what do you think? And then over the course of the movie, basically keeps killing him, you know, and tries to, you know, deal with the consequences, because the guy's got dreadful pain. And it's a really, really good retelling of the sort of kind of original Frankenstein story. It's got the, and I won't spoil the end, because it is out on DVD, I think, now.
Well, I was going to ask, I mean... I don't know how much you guys are sort of rivals with the Fright Fest, since they share the odd sci-fi film and you share the horror film. There's a bit of crossover there. But they've launched their own DVD line, releasing films that they've shared the festival. They seem to be a natural progression for Sci-Fi London.
Not at the moment. Right. We did toy with the idea. You know, it takes an awful lot of input in order to make that work and make it work properly. And I don't think our brand is strong enough really at the moment to do any numbers. You know, I don't know, I'd be able to sort of promise the guys who own Subject 2 that we could sell 50,000 units, because 50,000 units in the UK or whatever, because ultimately, you know, as Duff Simmons once said, it ain't called show business for nothing, you know, it is business, you know. It's so there's a, you know, there's the pitch to them that we could sell enough.
Yeah.
Then we've got to manufacture it, and then we've got to promote it, and then hope that we sell enough to get our money back and then make some for the filmmaker. But longer term, we have been talking about doing some things, you know, perhaps online and doing some video on demand, or putting some stuff on our website. Again, I don't particularly want to be in the DVD retailing business. It might be, if somebody approached us and said we'd like to use the Sci-Fi, you know, London label, then I'm sure, you know, we'd have a chat about them, about that, and see how we could, you know, how we could help promote, you know, terrible sound, how we could help promote that to happen. Well, going back to just about the cult film conference, about CineXS, the one thing that it that I'm hoping it will allow us to do is actually to sort of spread our program a little bit as well, without, it's not for anyone's benefit other than my own, really, when people say, well, that's not a science fiction film. I go, no, you're right, but it is a cult, or it might be a cult film, or it's a cine excess film that we can show, you know, so Taxidermia, again, like The Machinist, is a movie that we could show under Sci-Fi London's, you know, science fiction and fantastic film banner. But I think it sits more comfortably underneath the Cine Excess. And Edmund obviously wouldn't fit us at all. I don't want to give any spoilers away, actually. But although there is a scene at the beginning with a tarot card, William H. Macy goes to see a tarot reader in the sort of first 2 minutes of the movie, and she says, you're not where you're supposed to be. And then he goes home and leaves his wife. And that kind of opens the thing. But, you know, I don't know if, again, if I would take that as being, oh, right, it's paranormal, we can get at him, you know, that's, you know, that's...
So presumably tickets are selling fast.
Yeah, the Anime All-Nighter is nearly sold out. And interestingly, the Mystery Science Theatre 3000 All-Nighter, in fact, actually, I think it is sold out now. So, which I was, I mean, it's a small cinema, we put it in a small screen, but it's, it was selling, on a ratio, it was selling more tickets than anything else. As soon as the box office opened, it was the fastest selling thing in the programme. And I don't know what that says.
Well, I don't know, it almost seems to be something in the zeitgeist, because I think the Red Rose Comedy Club in Islington, they do, they show bad movies, and a couple of comedians talk over the top of them.
So. All right, okay, okay. Yeah, I don't know that, actually. I haven't been along to that, so maybe I should go and check that out.
Yeah.
I mean, we, you know...
So you've got people turning up as anime characters, you've got people bringing animatronic robots. So one of the things that you're not allowed to say about Sci-Fi London is it's not a convention.
Yeah.
Is that because conventions have this kind of whiff of bad sci-fi and what the press like to jump on as being why you shouldn't like sci-fi? Well, this is a sort of more kind of, this is more a sort of film-orientated love of the art form rather than sort of geek fest, I don't know.
Well, for, if you'd have asked me in the first year, I would have said yes, absolutely. It's, you know, it's for the love of the art, and, you know, and 6 years down the line, we kind of have a, you know, we do have people who we've seen year on year on coming to the festival because they know they're going to get to see some interesting films. You know, not all good, not all bad, but it's some interesting stuff that, again, they may never ever get to see. And the reason I'm kind of quite firm about saying we are not a convention, it's not because I have a problem with conventions, but we don't invite guests to come and do photo signings. We don't have memorabilia tables. We don't really encourage costume. We don't have a ball. We don't have. We don't. You know, we show films. That's what we do, and that's all we will ever strive to do. Everything else is to make the event more interesting than turning up, giving someone your ticket, watching the film and going home again. So it's to make the thing feel like an event, and you know, you get to sit and chat with people that, you know, that are there because they heard about a film. Again, as an example, the audience that came to see Die, You Zombie Bastards were not the audience that came to see Confederate States of America, or there were few people who crossed over between the two. There were one or two that, you know, faces that you saw. And you, I know that face. And stuff. Yeah. But again, that's typically, you know, we did a couple of screenings, I think, at CSA, and they were, you know, they were a different audience, you know. And that was my initial mission, apart from get the girl, you know, but my initial, you know, thing was to get people who don't like science fiction to come and see a science fiction film because it looks or sounds interesting. And it doesn't say the word, you know, and Star Trek, you know, not as any, you know, if we were offered the 14th or whatever it is, Star Trek film, J.J. Abrams is said to be doing, I'd probably actually ask them if we could see it first, given the size of the festival. Though, although I'd probably take it because the publicity around it, like 28 weeks later, you know, if it's got the right credibility, if you like, we would probably put it in. But I'd much rather put Primer in. In the festival, or I'd much rather put, you know, do a classic screening of something like Things to Come than just show Spidey 3, because you'll be able to see that everywhere, and then we've not done our job, as it were. So that's why we're not a convention, we're a film festival.
On Saturday the 5th of May, why not belatedly celebrate Walpurgisnacht, the European alternative to Halloween, by watching a quadruple bill of 1950s Hammer sci-fi films on the big screen at Sci-Fi London. and all proceeds from this event go to help Resonance FM. For more details about this and to download the podcast, please visit www.readyformycloseup.blogspot.com, where you'll also find out about tomorrow and Saturday's Graphic Novel Day at the Cartoon Museum, which features such speakers as Mark Stafford, who was one of the guests on this show during the London Film Festival, and Brian Talbot, who I'll be interviewing next month. And I'm ready for my close-up. We'll be back at the same time next week.